Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and today I have another wonderful guest that I'm excited to talk about, or talk with, about his organization there, Milton Campus. And yeah, we are going to, you can kind of give your title.
Give my resume. You want me to give my resume? It's long. It might take up the whole podcast.
Well, I will say that I wanted to have you on, one, because I just love hearing the stories of martial artists. Mainly, I'm interested in. Hearing about and sharing the wonderful organization that you're part of, Academy Safe.
Sure.
I think is a very much needed resource in the martial arts world today. And so we'll definitely get into that in a bit. But yeah, I would say I usually kind of start things off with giving a little bit of my background. I started formally in martial arts in the 90s. I have ranks in Kenpo and Capoeira, and I've done some boxing. I've done some Hapkido and Taekwondo, and now I am actively training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and in Muay Thai. So,
all right,
I stay busy, and along with work and two dogs, and and this podcast,
everything.
I stay busy. I stay real busy. But so that's kind of the Cliff Notes version of my story. But let's. Jump over to you. How did the martial arts find you? How did you get started? And kind of we'll get into a little bit of where the early journey went, and then we'll move into talking about Academy Safe.
So sure. So back when I was a child, I'm 51 years old. I'll be 52 in June. Like most people, mom and dad put me in karate when I was a kid. I can remember it quite vividly. I was in karate for a few months. The sensei punched a kid in the stomach that was like, I guess these days you probably could say that he has ADD, or excuse me, ADD, right? He has some type of, like, he couldn't sit still, he couldn't line up. Coach punches him in the stomach, and then I was petrified. I was probably somewhere between 7 and 9. I was also actually a gymnast. My sister and I, our school had a gymnastics program. So we would literally like go to gym class and do gymnastics. And then after, like any other sport, they had an after school sport, but for elementary school. So it was like, you didn't really have like soccer and baseball in elementary school. There was anything competitive when you were in grade school, but we had a gymnastics and you could go after school and do gymnastics. So we did that from probably both of us from about 5 till I did it till it was about 16. And my sister did it. She did it competitively in school up to 18. And the reason I say that is because I sprained my thumb at a gymnastics show. We did an end of the year show and I sprained my thumb and it gave me the perfect excuse to quit karate. Cause I was petrified every time I went to that class after the sensei hit that little kid. So the little kid didn't know any better. Like, this adult gets to hit us. And it wasn't like a little punch. I mean, the kid fell to the floor. He's crying. Parents weren't there. Like it was bad. I was like, well, gee, what are you got me doing here, mom and dad? So I did not do any martial arts again until I was 19. I did wrestle in junior high. Officially, I think, if you look up the definition, I think it's actually considered an art or martial art, wrestling. Yeah, so I did some wrestling. Which actually plays into now, I am a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I've been training since I was 41, so a little over 10 years. I'm actually, December was 1 year at black belt. Nice. But I wound up at 19, other than the wrestling, at 19, me and a buddy, I actually wound up getting certified as a lifeguard. at a local YMCA, and I saw that they had a Taekwondo program. And me and a buddy, we signed up. They called it American Taekwondo. I did that for a few months. Again, I quit everything that I did. I didn't have a family that was just like, you got to stay in and do it. And, you know, like, I wish they would have. My game was actually really soccer. I was an amazing soccer player and really, really fast. We had a really good track program in our schools. So that's where I should have stayed. But again, quit, girls, want to work, like all that stuff happened. So I, you know, when people say, wow, you found jiu-jitsu so late in life, you know, 41, why would you do that to yourself? I've just never had the discipline at other points in my life to stick to something like this. You know, going on, what is it? It's 11 years, going on 12 years. So, you know, that was my journey. And, you know, I couldn't imagine my life without jiu-jitsu. I've also done, you know, just most jiu-jitsu academies in South Florida have some type of like no-gi day. They mix that in with MMA. So I've, you know, trained under Muay Thai coaches and, you know, a little bit of wrestling here and there. Definitely wrestling has definitely been the one thing that has helped me out in my jiu-jitsu, because if you did, you know, I only wrestled for a couple of years, but there are things that I've done, like, you know, just simple cradles and takedowns and things like that, that people just don't know how to do. I was doing when I was, you know, a teenager. So those things have definitely helped. But, you know, my journey was really long, you know, but I just never had the stick-to-itiveness, if that's a word, the stick-to-itiveness to actually stay in a discipline. Once I got older, you know, as a business person, you know, like, business really probably taught me the discipline, you know, being patient. Now, kind of like my business background fed my, you know, my martial arts, and now my martial arts is feeding back to business, because now I'm learning so much more on the mat. I think a lot of people could probably say the same thing. So that led me to training. I don't like to mention the names of the academies or the coaches, because I don't want to be in a place where I'm throwing stones, but I was part of an affiliation that got into some trouble at other locations, not at mine, not where the places I trained, but the affiliation got in trouble. Coaches got arrested for statutory rape. There were two cases at the same time. They got in trouble, I believe convicted. So they were either out on probation or parole, and both of them wound up fleeing back to Brazil. The affiliate owner took a ton of heat, rightfully so. They tried to cover it up. Lots of things happened, and I was part of that affiliation, and I told my coach at the time, I was probably training there as a purple belt, training for about, I think, maybe 4 or 5 years at that point with him, maybe total at 4 or 5 years. And I told him, I said, I'm not paying a monthly fee to you and it's going to them. Like, they're, you know, it goes up into the affiliation. I'm not going to support something like this. I have a podcast as well called the Jiu-Jitsu Dummies Podcast. May is 6 years that we've been doing that podcast. And my co-host at the time, we were training in two different affiliates of that same affiliation, two different schools of the same affiliate. And we wound up putting out a video saying, like, you know, we can't do this. We can't stay. He was actually at one of the locations where one of the coaches wound up teaching and being around kids after being convicted of statutory rape. So it's you're not supposed to be around kids, period. And here you are teaching. And then they tried to lie. And there were, like, images come out on lo and behold, on Instagram, there he is behind the desk, you know, working on the mats, doing video. He was like the videographer there. Mm-hmm. So he wound up having a job around, you know, women and children. So fast, my coach winds up leaving the affiliation. I said, I knew he was leaving the affiliation anyway. He had plans on the future of, like, creating his own affiliation. So it just sped up the process. But he was just like, I guess now's the time. I have a marketing background. I also own a marketing company called Black Belt Digital Marketing. So he had always asked me for advice. So I knew what he was going to, I knew the plan. So it just sped up that plan. He left. I stayed at the academy and we moved on. 3 or 4 years later, he winds up getting caught, not doing anything illegal, but morally wrong, by hitting on the wives and girlfriends of his male students. You know, DMing, getting on Instagram, basically asking, you know, grooming them and eventually asking them out on a date or something like that. They might have problems with the husband. So he's using, you know, I call it, he used his student list almost like a Tinder. And that school, we had a lot of families. So sometimes the women train there as well. So it was like kids were on the mat, and then they recruit the husband and wife to, or the mom and dad to train. So he was hitting on the women that were coming to the facility as well. Not only, you know, he was doing that, and then also potentially hitting on your wife, who's, you know, maybe has a kid in the school. So they're on Instagram. You know, we're all friends on Instagram, and you're liking pictures. So the grooming process was kind of like a whole bunch of your pictures, get you talking, chatting, now flirt, and then see if there was something going on. And I know this intimately because it happened to a very close friend of mine whose wife showed him. She's like, look at this feed, and they kind of kept the conversation going to see where it would go. But she's like, look what he's doing. So I know it quite intimately. So Academy Safe was born. Because of those two incidents, Academy Safe was born. And what is Academy Safe? If I can, Reggie, I'll just tell you.
Oh, yes.
Right, I'll go through it. I don't want to just take up all the airtime here.
No, that's why I wanted to have you on the show. I can totally relate to a school that I was a part of, had the lead instructor was hitting on, you know, anytime a female walked in the door, if they met his standards, he was going to hit on them. And
the power dynamic, there's immediately a power dynamic there that, you know, we've seen it with the Me Too movement, and, you know, you're in charge and there's either some attraction or some, you know, that person knows that I have this power over you. Am I going to use that power dynamic with a coach, with an employee, with a student? And in martial arts, you know, I like to say, you know, just because you have a black belt or a black belt doesn't make you a good person. Being a good person makes you a good person, right?
Exactly.
So there's just these dynamics in the martial arts world. And I even say even more so in jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu has been the discipline that I've been in the longest, but I've done other things where, you know, I call it the most intimate of martial arts. You mentioned before that you started training jiu-jitsu. We're laying on top of each other. You know, I've trained with women before, and hey, you want to roll, right? At the end of class, after instruction, like probably a half hour to maybe an hour, depending on your school, you're sparring. And that could be with somebody of the opposite sex. And you hit things touch, you're sitting on somebody's head trying to do a Kimura. Like, it is extremely intimate. You're taking people's backs, they're sitting on your lap, you've got, you know, neon bellies. It's just like this weird, I'm laying on top of you trying to smother you. We are in very, for the lack of a better term, I call it a very intimate position. So it's, you know, there have just been lots of stories about this. You know, everybody, when I talk to people, I don't think there's one person that's been in a martial art for more than just a few years, or let's say at least a year, that doesn't say, you know, I've either experienced something, heard something, or seen something, right? Either experienced something myself, I've heard of all the craziness, or yeah, this happened to me. So there are, you know, just, we could have said, hey, we just want to do this for jiu-jitsu, but we know that there are problems everywhere. And basically what we're doing is we created a database, and we're asking people, coaches and academies, to be members. Come on, be a member, and we're going to background check the owner and their coaches and staff. I want to background check the person at the front desk. If they're in any way, shape, or form an employee, or anyone over 18 that works in your facility, paid or non-paid, should be background checked, right? They're going to be around our kids and or wives, girlfriends, daughters, right? We want them to have a background check. The things that I'm about to list, there are 8 different things we do. These are all basics. There's nothing here that we're asking that anybody can be like, oh man, I don't need to, why would you want to do that? And you'll understand it when you hear the list. So background checks for all staff and coaches. U.S. Center for Safe Sport certification. If anybody understands or knows U.S. Center for Safe Sport, it's the organization that was born out of the sexual improprieties of the doctor in the gymnastics world, right? The Olympic gymnastics team. I forget his name. I should know that name. You know, he went to jail. It was born from that disaster, right? That those girls were just being preyed on for years. So the U.S. Center for Safe Sport is born. And right now they pretty much primarily cover any Paralympic or Olympic sports. So if there's a, you know, wrestling to Olympics, you know, judo through to the Olympics. Like, they're letting you not only get certified in their courses, but you can also, if there is a problem, they will investigate if it's an Olympic sport. So right down to, you know, a kid's judo academy, like you can put in a report and, you know, and make a complaint, and they're supposed to investigate. But they also provide this course that gives coaches, even parents, really, it's training you on what to look out for. We mentioned before, like, grooming. We've mentioned, like, you know, they talk about bullying. So there's a process that usually happens when somebody's going to do this, right? So there's a, you know, is that, are they, do I see a weakness there? Is there a way in the door? A single, a child with only a mother in the household, maybe. Or again, a wife that's unhappy, something comes at you, they know they're unhappy. So they're preying on people who they perceive as weak. It's usually what happens. You're not going to, you know, hit on the person that's the most vocal, like, oh, you know, they're going to out me, right? So understanding what to look out for as a coach, what not to do as a coach, things that you shouldn't be doing and things that look inappropriate. My home gym has gone through, all the coaches have gone through it. And we're looking at each other sometimes when something happens, not with coaches, but among students. We're like, yeah, if that was a coach, that would be inappropriate. I had a situation. Let me not talk about that situation, because not a bad situation, but just an interaction between a male and a female in my school. And I was just like, he's a black belt. They're adults. There's nothing inappropriate. But the interaction was strange to me. And I was like, if I was a coach and that would happen to me, I would have had to say, hold on, wait, this is inappropriate. If I'm a paid coach or even a staff member coach with keys to the door, I'm opening, like, and then we're alone one day, it feels and seems inappropriate, right? So U.S. Center for Safe Sport helps you kind of realize those things for yourself, but it also is training parents, coaches, and owners what to be looking out for as far as, like, is that grooming happening over there? Why is that kid always attached to that coach? Why is that coach always around that child, right? We want to keep an eye out for those things. And we hope that nothing bad's going to happen. But if everybody in the academy understands that, like, everyone's eyes are open to this, it's less likely that you're going to do something stupid. So that was number two. Number three, there is a concussion course that we put them through. It's a half hour course. It's pretty simple, more about, like, what to look out for. We want you to have a defibrillator on premises. We want you to get certified in CPR, first aid, and the use of that defibrillator. Security cameras on premises. Verification of the owner and staff, like their belt ranks and or lineage. We would say, right, I think most disciplines would say your lineage. Where does your jiu-jitsu, where does your kempo come from? Who's taught it to you? Whether that's certificates, whether that's promotions with a well-known, you know, coach, sensei, professor. And then business and academy insurance, like just business insurance, liability insurance, which, believe it or not, winds up being the one thing that when we're putting academies through, that's academies, like, they let it go after they sign their lease. They sign their lease, they get their lease signed, the insurance documentation is required. And then lo and behold, it's one of the first things, if they're in trouble or if they're slow, they want to save money, it's the one thing that they let go. So those are eight items. Go through that list in your head. Is there anything there that we're asking anybody to do that they shouldn't already be doing, right? You should have business insurance. You should be, you know, belted and have been promoted in your discipline. Security cameras are just a safe bet for everybody. Knowing CPR and first aid, you pop somebody in the face, get a bloody eye, you should be able to take care of them. I had a heart attack, so this one's close to my, is literally close to my heart, is having a defibrillator on premises, and then concussion course, the Center for Safe Sport certification, and a background check. These are all basic things. A lot of these things you're supposed to do anyway. Some locales, different areas, states, counties, cities require different things. We're asking people to do these things, and we'll accredit them. They get these certifications to get accredited by us. Now, I say all that, and I'll end with this as it relates to Academy Safe and our requirements. We cannot predict bad behavior, right? I know that just because we do a background check on somebody who's 18, 40, or 60 doesn't mean that they have done something, that they haven't done something that they just didn't get caught for, or that they do something stupid in the future. But we're erring on the side of, like, we're gambling on the side that everyone's antennas are up. They're going to realize, like, everybody's watching, and be less likely to do something stupid. But we know it's going to happen that we have an accredited academy and somebody comes in and does something dumb. It's going to happen. And when I say something dumb, you know, potentially assault somebody, you know, inappropriate behavior, it's going to happen. We expect it. We are prepared for it. Right now, nothing's happened. Nothing's been reported to us. But why are we doing this? We want people to feel safer. And if we can, you know, we're in phase one of building our database and getting coaches and academies signed on. We've been doing it since November. We want the phase two is then advertising ourselves as this database that is available for people. Like, I'm sure when people find out you're a martial artist, you've gotten this. Hey, I'm trying to get my son into some martial arts. Do you know any places where I should go? You've had to have had that in your life multiple times, right? We want you to say, either, you know, I come to my academy and it's great because I'm there and I know it's wonderful and that's usually going to be the case. My reply is usually, well, where are you? And if I know somebody near that, you know, academy near them, I would recommend, here, go here. How old is this student? Okay, you're older. Maybe you want to go to this one. Oh, you've got kids. They have a great bullying program at this school. But I want that to turn into like, well, you should check out academysafe.org. Go through. Those academies have all been vetted. You know, it's background checks being one of the most important things. Let's make sure we're keeping out any creepers that have done anything before. That's what we want. So that's phase two, which we're able to do now. And, you know, like we're posting on social media. We're talking about the academies that get accredited. And we want people to come, whether you are a martial artist already or you are somebody that's looking to get into the martial arts or get a child or family member to martial arts. We want you to go to our database. We want you to click on find an academy on our website. We want you to put in your city and your state and find an accredited academy near you. So we're still in the early phases of that. We're getting coaches signed up. We should be in the next couple of weeks with people that are getting set up and getting us information and going through their background check. We should be right around 75 different coaches and academy owners have signed up. That we've done that with zero advertising. It's just been social media push and grassroots. We're very lucky to have some heavy hitters involved. If most people know McDojo Life on Instagram, they've seen the videos of like the crazy, like people trying to chop blocks or fire wood or, you know, Rob Ingram.
Rob
from,
on.
Okay,
Rob
you did.
On,
oh, course, beautiful. So, yeah. Rob
That's
is our executive
how
VP.
I got into hearing about Academy Safe when.
Okay, perfect, beautiful.
It was like, oh, okay.
He is a big part of this. He was the first person I brought the idea to. I was doing this. I was buying names. I was doing logos. And I said, Rob, am I crazy? Is this something we can do? And I'll never forget the words out of his mouth. He said, Milton, people have been trying to get me to do this for years. He goes, but I'm one person. I can't do all of these things. And he says, whatever you need from me, I want to be involved. I said, would you want to be on the board? I didn't call him to be on the board. I really wanted to know, let me run this idea by the guy that's been outing people or doing stories on the people once they get caught. It's been very reactionary to the world in a good way, right? Let's make sure everybody knows he's got his own database of people that have been to jail and convicted on his website. A lot of people don't know that. You can go to his website and see and find names of people that have been jailed and their sentence and what they did and the age of the victim. Like, it's crazy. But it's been after the fact. And in a good way, in such a good way, he's outed that and made them more more prevalent, like in the news. Get them out there. Get them online. Get them in the news. Let's spread this word and make it even bigger so that people know what this person did. But what could we do something before that? Could we do something? He was on board immediately. We continued to build. He came on. We now have a Secret Service agent, Joe Scargill, who's part of the board. I'm not going to say his name yet because we haven't finalized everything. We have to do a board vote, but we have a super heavy hitter, a litigation attorney who's a black belt in jiu-jitsu who's coming aboard. So we've got some really powerful people in their respective industries. Rob with 640,000 followers on Instagram alone. I think he's like 125 or 130 subscribers, 1,000 subscribers on his YouTube. These are powerful voices in their respective industries. And then myself, again, I have everybody that's involved with Academy Safe, I met on my podcast, Jiu-Jitsu Dummies. So there were people that I interviewed. Again, no agenda. This wasn't a thing. But when I, you know, interviewing Rob three times and then coming back and saying, you know, he's probably the guy that I should talk to about this because he's the guy that's been doing this. This I'm in his ring right now. This is him. Joe Scargill, same thing. I was talking about this. He was just like, I think I can help you with this. So people have come to the table and said they want to be involved, and they realize how important this is. So here we are, and we've been around since November. It's continuing to grow. We've got some really big partnerships going on. We've got Avive, which supplies like the latest technology in defibrillators. We partnered with them to provide discounts on this latest and greatest in defibrillators. We're working, some of the organizations I can't say, but we're working with a tournament system that's about to get all of its coaches, its staff and its referees for the tournament system listed on our site. So we'll have them under, we have a martial arts businesses section. We'll either do that or add a tournament listing as well. We have one of the biggest colleges in the country has 20 different martial arts programs. They're in California. Again, can't say their name just yet. We've just onboarded, he's just going through his background check. So we've just onboarded him, but he's not on the site yet. The director of the entire martial arts program, which has 20 disciplines, under his program. So we're getting him set up. We're getting him through the process. The school has been very open to working with us. And now we'll have all 20 of those programs, hopefully in the new year, in the 2025-26 school year. We should have all of the coaches and assistant coaches signed up on our program, gone through the background checks, done everything that they need to do here. They obviously don't have to have insurance because the school has the insurance, right? The school has a defibrillator, so we'll make adjustments in their listings. But when they get listed on the site, we'll be able to show those 20 disciplines and show people that they've gone through this the accreditation process. So lots of really cool things happening. Very, very warm reception from the public. And it's become my mission. And I should say, those guys are great. A shout out to my Black Belt marketing team. I own Black Belt Digital Marketing, and I couldn't have done it without logo done in 2 days. Marketing, social media setup done in a couple of days. Because we were able to take the business, the nonprofit, and say, okay, it's just going to be a client of Black Belt Digital Marketing. So I have, made them a client, and they don't pay much, if anything. But my team was able to do everything. It's probably the thing that stops a lot of people from doing something like a nonprofit like this, because I got to find a company to do a logo, and then I got to get quotes and prices, and now I've got to build a website. We were able to just do everything essentially in-house and launch this thing. I registered in Florida in July. By November, we were up and running, raising money, and the website was completely up. We were raising money a little bit before that. Once we got our registrations from the state and federal governments, but we raised money right out the gate. Was able to put that money towards some of the things that we needed, and we've just been, without spending any money on advertising, which is a big feat. We've had a consistent. There's been consistency in the signups, I should say. People are signing up, going to our website, purchasing their membership, getting in. Some of the coaches are paying for their entire staff. Some of them have the staff come on and do it themselves. But we give them a listing page, and then we show them in their process when each line item expires, if there's an expiration date attached to it. And anybody that goes to the website can be comfortable in knowing that they're going here and they can see exactly where that they stand. If they lose an accreditation, we'll post if there is negative news about the academy. We're also integrating their Google reviews into the listings in the coming weeks. So there's a lot going on. Basically, again, be the one-stop shop for you to choose an academy. That will be academysafe.org.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of what you're doing. It's always been kind of funny to me that in the martial arts community, in the martial arts business, that there isn't kind of a governing, I don't want to say, I guess I shouldn't say governing body. I mean, there's a lot of different styles and different teachers.
I call it, I say the same thing. I call it a governing body. I think that's the right term. And I believe that we can become the governing body over all of the martial arts if we do this correctly. There are some organizations like USA Wrestling. They do background checks in safe sport. They do this. They've been doing it. ATA has background checks. I believe they have safe sport as well. So there are organizations that are doing these things. The downside is, like, you do jiu-jitsu, so I'm going to cite IBJJF, the biggest tournament system in jiu-jitsu worldwide. They do a background check and the safe sport certification on an owner if he wants to register his affiliation. If you want to register your black belt and your affiliation so that your affiliates can then go compete, you have to do it. And I've had black belts or I've had members of my organization say, oh, this guy says he's already done that. We're not just asking for the owner. We want the staff. Because more often than not, it's a staff member that's done something, that does something stupid. You know, not that the coaches and the owners at the top haven't gotten there, you know, gotten in trouble as well. But our program is about everyone in that academy. If you have a driver picking up kids from the local school, you're busing them in, he needs to go through this process. He needs to go through everything. If you are at the front desk, you don't even train, but you're at the front desk and you're interacting with the children, women, mothers, fathers, everyone. Those organizations are, I don't know about ATA, but I know IBJJF, right? They are, if you want to call them, they're trying to be the governing body for jiu-jitsu, but they're a tournament system and not everybody likes them. So they kind of say, I'm not going to do that. But again, they only require it of the person at the top. So we're requiring it of everybody. And that's what makes us different. On top of that, I don't know what their registration, like how they're registered, but I know we are a nonprofit. This is not about making money. We're not going to get rich from this, right? We want to create this database and make it safer for people to do this thing that we love, right? For anybody that's out there listening that doesn't train, I know, you know, when I would just do my boxing and just do my kickboxing, or then I do my jiu-jitsu, or I did them in the same class, I call it, like, it cleanses my soul when I come out of that class. There's something, especially for me with jiu-jitsu, where I have rolled with different people and you are fighting for your life. You know, people, we're simulating choking. We're simulating breaking of limbs, right? The hyperextension of an arm, all right? Somebody getting on your back and doing a rear naked choke. You can't think much about the problems of the day when somebody's trying to kill you, right? So there is something cleansing about, I know, jiu-jitsu, and I know a lot of the other martial arts say the same thing. There's just something, I go in there, the community, the brother and sisterhood, just the getting out the stress of the day, exerting that energy, literally getting that energy out versus sitting on the couch and having a glass of wine or a beer, and you think that you've, like, okay, the stress is gone. No, the stress is in there. You need to get that. That's energy that you need to get out. So we know this beautiful thing. We want to make this beautiful thing safer for everybody, and we don't want anybody to be. I know people that have had, you know, kind of like, I don't train anymore because I had a bad experience, or, you know, I don't compete anymore. I found a little gym over here, but I just stay quiet. I don't want to be part of those bigger gyms. It's a shame that, you know, people not being able to behave turns people off to martial arts, because it's a beautiful thing. That, you know, not only all the things that I just said, but, you know, learning to protect yourself, you know, the quiet confidence that goes along with you walking into a room and knowing that you could take care of yourself, where you would have maybe felt uncomfortable, or other people that you know would feel uncomfortable walking into that same room, that bar, that club, that restaurant, walking down the street at night. I think most of us who do martial arts, look, we're not bulletproof, but we definitely walk with our heads held a little bit higher, and that, like, don't fuck with me attitude, excuse me for cursing, but right, that attitude that we have of, like, I know that I can take care of myself. If it was, you know, mano a mano, you know, no weapons, if I feel comfortable that I can take care of myself. So it's a beautiful thing, and it gives us so much that somebody doing something stupid in an academy halfway across the country, souring it for somebody else, a parent not wanting to put their kids into a martial art, the, I don't know if you heard the story, I think it's up in Hudson, New York, the Leclercs or Leclairs.
Oh, yeah.
They had six different academies. You can go onto McDojo Life's YouTube channel to check out those videos. But not only did the son get in trouble for inappropriate behavior with children, it turns out the father was convicted of rape back in the 90s, and it was like a sealed file. They have six martial arts locations. Nobody did a background check. Nobody found a news story. How did this happen? His son getting in trouble shed light on this, right? So there are a lot of that we had our first local academy to them sign on and is getting accredited. But it's amazing how much damage that could do or has done. Because there are people in the area that go, I ain't putting my kid into martial arts. I would tell those people that are thinking about that or not, there's like, I'm just, they're closed off to martial arts. The one thing with everything that we have here on that list, all eight items that we say that we look at, the one thing I tell parents is don't leave your kids alone with anybody. You know, grab your phone, grab your laptop, sit in that academy, sit in the waiting room, sit on, you know, off the side of the mat, however your academy's set up, and just hang out. They should never be alone with anybody else. You should never be sending, you know, school is maybe a little bit different, but you should never be sending a kid, your kid on the road with a coach to travel to do a competition or a tournament. I wouldn't. If you want to protect them and you're like, the alternative is not doing martial arts at all, you know, they don't have to go to every competition. And if they do, you should be with them. Or, you know, unless there's really somebody there that you trust, another family member, an older brother or sister, you know, it only takes one time for something really stupid, really, you know, bad to happen. Just don't leave them alone. That's the alternative. I know in my old school, there were parents that I know of a woman who went, she had two kids in the class and they were actually training in the adults class at a point, but they went through the kids system. She always went. She sat there. She'd be crocheting and knitting, and she was just at. If she wasn't there, it was just like, "Where's mom? Like, why isn't she here?" She was like part of the school. She knew what was going on. She knew. She had heard stories about his inappropriate behavior. Now, it's morally wrong. It's not criminal. It's morally wrong to be hitting on women in your academy. But she knew intimately. I won't go into that story. But she knew what he had done with somebody that she knew. So she never left her kids alone. And that's the way around it. And everybody used to be like, why is she always here? Just drop them off and go. I used to say it. And now I know. Now I know why she was always there, because she knew. She knew her daughter was getting older. Her daughter looked like she was probably 7, 8 years old. She's very tall. Daughter looked like she was what? She was 12. I've trained with her. She went from 12 to 14. She looked like an adult. She looked like she was in her 20s. So, I mean, again, that, you know, guys would talk to her and maybe talk to her inappropriately. Like, things like that could happen. But not leaving them alone is the way to offset that or to make sure it doesn't happen. So, you know, it doesn't have to sour the entire martial arts system. And there are great coaches out there. They're incredible owners and academies throughout all martial arts. But what do they say? What's the saying? Like, one bad apple ruins the bunch.
Exactly.
A Leclerc's, you know, now they're trying to pass legislation to do background checks, not just on martial arts academies, but anyone interacting with children. You would think, like, that's not a thing already? That's not a thing? If you work with kids that you have to have a background check? Apparently in New York, it's not. So the New York State Legislature, somebody, one of the legislators introduced a bill to make it mandatory, which is amazing, which is great. And, I mean, if it's got to be done through legislation and not just something like us, that's great. But great. When that happens and passes in New York, hey, New York academies, come to us. We'll do the background check for you. And on top of that, we're going to list you on the site and help you advertise. So, you know, advertise you by being on the site. So that's where we're at. You know, it's this amazing thing that I would have never thought I was going to be involved with. I don't want to be involved. I don't want to do this. I don't think anybody wants to do this and hear about sexual assault and rapes. You know, all day, because now that's what happens. But it's necessary. Somebody's got to do it. I just happen to be in the right place at the right time with the right people around me. So We've been saying like we're not going to stop until the job is done, but the job will never be done because there'll always be new academies opening. So we're here for the long haul.
Yeah, no, I love that, and it's always been kind of really surprising to me that there's all these other industries that have the government regulations or all these rules are scrutinized about what we're doing. And yet here we have the martial arts industry that is a combat system, things where we're in close proximity to people, we're kicking, punching, choking, doing all of these, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, violent things to people. But yet there's like everyone just kind of, oh, well, you know, he's a black belt, so that's fine. She's a black belt, so that's fine. And it's like, really, nobody's interested in not only doing things like the background checks, but having some, you know, CPR training, checking lineage, like all of those kind of things. Martial arts just gets a pass, and it's always been very interesting to me that there isn't, you know,
I'm sorry, more
eyeballs on that sort of thing.
I want to say something about the defibrillator. I had a heart attack 8 years ago. I had a heart attack training. I actually had two heart attacks back to back, one on a Friday night and one on a Saturday night. Now, people hear heart attack and immediately they believe like I'm passed out on the floor and there's somebody giving me. No, I was having an episode. My main artery was blocked 80%. I didn't know. I thought I was healthy. So, you know, martial artist. I'm training 5-6 times a week. I worked out. Always a bigger guy. Love food. You know, didn't always take care of myself, but you know, no fast food for 2 decades. I thought I was good. Always I'm a bigger guy, you know, a little bit of a belly, but I could take care of myself and I thought I was taking care of my body. I have a heart attack on a Friday night during training. Again, don't know. I go and have, like jiu-jitsu guys would do, go to the acai place, go have some acai with the boys. And honestly, I'm not even trying to sound funny. I was having a little pain. I thought I had to go to the bathroom. I thought I had to poop. I say, guys, I'm going to go. I luckily live very close to the house. I go home and tell my wife. I'm like, you know, I'm having this weird pain. It feels like somebody's sitting on my chest. I go go to the bathroom, go take a shower. That's fine. Saturday is our early morning training. I go to Saturday training. Same thing. I train. I'm fine. I feel great. I go home. Honey, I'm like, same thing. Long story short, she talks me into going to the hospital after we sat for a little bit. Let's see if this passes. Wind up going to the hospital. They hook me up to an EKG, and they don't say the word heart attack until they put me in an ambulance to go to. They took me to a cardiovascular like specialty hospital where they went in and wound up putting in 4 stints over 2 days. But until they put me up to that EKG, like, you know, I have it. The listeners aren't going to see it, but I actually have my EKG tattooed on my arm right next to my jiu-jitsu on my arm. It shows the little dip that the EKG picked up. So my point here was that, you know, people will think, oh, well, I don't have a defibrillator. What's going to happen? If I would have had a massive heart attack on the mat, I don't know that anybody would have known CPR, would have been able to revive me. Until I had the heart attack and I mentioned it to my coach, they did not have a defibrillator. So if I would have had like the movie version of my heart attack where I would have been like, oh God, you know, what was it? You know, Red Fox, I'm coming to see you, Elizabeth, whatever.
Yeah.
Like if I would have been having that and I would have passed out or I would have gone unconscious, I don't know that anybody there could have saved me. I just don't know. We don't know. But it's one of the reasons why that's super important to me, because if it would have happened, I would have been dead. I could have been dead. I could have just ignored it on that Saturday morning and then That physical exertion was making those symptoms come out. My heart was basically trying to redirect blood is what it's trying to do. And it's like the doctor describes it like your heart was choking. It couldn't get enough air. So it's like trying to fix it. And your heart will try to send air through different, you know, veins around the heart and get in arteries and all that stuff. I know I'm not probably saying all this perfectly, but it was it was that pressure was my heart was giving me that signal like, hey, that you're in trouble. They call it a non-STEMI heart attack, by the way, in case anybody's interested. So I wound up, you know, getting four stents, and I went back to train after about 3 weeks. And I did mention to my coach, I'm like, hey, you know, do you guys, who knows CPR? And, you know, do you guys have an AED or ever think about getting an AED? And they did it, and I'm thankful that they did that. But again, it's one of the reasons why, if it's one of the points, if anybody's ever looking at it going, what do you need that for? You know, we've got older people, women have heart attacks, kids can have heart attacks. You know, right? They have the pads for kids. The older defibrillators have pads for kids and adults. The newer ones, it's just one set of pads for everything. But there's a reason why they have the kids' pads, right? Because kids can have a heart attack. There can be an incident. So it is something that's near and dear to me. And when you really sit back and think about it again, when you go down those 8 points, nobody's can sit in front of me and have an argument like, you know, security cameras really aren't necessary. Okay, let's, you know, we can have a good argument about that. Like, not only does it protect you, the owner, from somebody making an allegation that's not true, but you get to keep an eye on your coaches. You get to keep an eye on the facility, like if somebody was to break in. And yes, it shows somebody that might do something bad. There's a camera right there. I'm not doing this bad thing right now, right? I am not going to touch that child. I'm not going to grab somebody inappropriately. I'm not going to say anything. Does that camera have sound, right? It's a deterrent. So again, I can argue every single one of those points. We're not asking anybody to like take tons of money out of their pocket and spend a bunch of money. We'll help them. We'll guide them. We'll tell them where to go. We'll get them through our program. And then for the coach, you're going to be on this website and we're going to advertise the website so that you get found more as well. So you're going to get something back of it. You know, for coaches, it's $99 per year. We do, it includes the background check, safe sport and concussion. For your coaches, it's $75. It's annual. And again, you know, I know for jiu-jitsu, average cost is $150 to maybe $200 a month, depending on maybe, you know, maybe you have a stand-up program, maybe you have this program and something all-inclusive. I was paying about $160 at my old academy. $99 for you to be registered for a year. You need to get one student for 1 month to pay you, you know. Hopefully he's on for the whole 12 months. He's on with you for years. One student pays for the year. So you can't tell me you can't afford it either. Like, it's nominal. It's very inexpensive. We have a lot of things that we have to do. It is a nonprofit, so we don't have tons of money coming in and tons of money going out in payroll. But that's all it's going to take is you're going to – a half of a student almost, right? You know, you're paying $150 a month. We're only charging $99. It covers you for the year. And all you need to do is get one student from this system. We give you an accreditation sticker for multiple accreditation stickers for your windows, your front desk. So you actually show that you're accredited with us and the time frame when you started, when it expires, and we'll get that to them every year. There's just so much here that I don't think that anybody can argue that, hey, you should take this thing off. Concussion course, boxing, taekwondo, you know, disciplines where we're striking. It's important to know. My academy the other day, two kids were just training and hit each other's heads. Last night, one kid completely tripped over a couple of other kids training. Things happen. Those kids hit each other's heads. Like, my coaches have been through the concussion course. They realized, okay, wasn't that bad. You guys are okay. No problems. Keep an eye on them. Like, now they know. Now they're thinking about it, where before they just might not have thought about it. So again, it's bringing these things to a level that people are talking about them. We talk about it all the time at the school now. Who else is on? No, that school signed up. That's great. I told my buddy he should do this. But that conversation and the light, I guess, what did I say? Sunlight's the best disinfectant. The sunlight on these, that is shining on these things, is what's, I think, really going to help academies be better and for us to see less and less, you know, sexual assault or inappropriate behavior in this martial arts world. If you Google, anybody out there, Google sexual assault martial arts, It's disgusting how much will come up. And look at the dates. We're talking about it's every single week, every month. There's a new story. So if you don't think it's a problem, do that Google search, and you will quickly change your mind.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. There's no excuse to not be set up with something like this. I mean, you could we lust for that nice gi, or we want to go to that tournament or something. It's like, okay,
yeah,
you can wear the gi you've been using and get something that's gonna help, you know, protect your school, protect your students, protect you. There's really no excuse, and I really have to shake my head at those that are giving you any kind of pushback about you know, signing up and being a part of. So I know I'm definitely a huge fan of it, and I'm definitely going to spread it out to all that I can. I actually had a discussion with my instructor yesterday about this, and you know, he didn't know about it, and he was like, "Oh, like that's huge. That's definitely what we should have been doing." I mean, he's already done had people background checked and things like that, but you know, it's, I like that it's more than just, okay, background checks, but having the CPR training, having the rank certification, all those little things that we just kind of don't really put a lot of thought into, or
we take them for granted.
Yeah, that exactly. So big fan of that, and I will definitely promote that, and get all the links and everything for that in the show, but in the show notes. But so we're gonna go ahead and move to our lightning round here as we kind of finish up here. So I got a few little questions to throw at you, and then we'll wrap up our time for today. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Yes, I would say my favorite submissions that I do, I guess we can call it a technique, is I love the north-south choke, and I'm a big fan of what we call the lockdown. You know, north-south, I'm literally laying on your head, choking you, like our feet are pointing in two different directions. I'm going to be on top, and I'm choking you with kind of like a, almost like a guillotine style, but my shoulders like on your neck in the front. And then the lockdown is a great, if you look up like 10th Planet lockdown or Eddie Bravo lockdown, you can check it out. Where, especially for bigger players, if there's somebody bigger on top of me and I can't get them off of me, if I can lock their legs down, I can lock their one leg down, it stops them from being able to pass my guard or to proceed. And then there's some great sweeps where I can turn them over and some submissions from the bottom. So it's a great, I don't want to call it a stalling tactic, but for somebody who's super aggressive, I do it on a lot of like younger, like white and blue belts who get, we call it being spazzy in jiu-jitsu, where they really, really like are going too hard. Get them in a lockdown. It slows them down. They wind up like, I can't get out of this. What am I going to do? I usually try to submit them or sweep them. And then at the end of that roll, I'll usually tell them how to get out of it. And in that moment, you know, I can talk to them about how spazzy they were being. I'll tell them, like, I usually do this on guys that are spazzy. So it also helps me kind of coach them and bring them down a little bit.
Very nice. Very nice. I like, I know that you're primarily a jiu-jitsu guy, but I will ask this anyway. Do you have a favorite form?
Forms are like almost like the katas, right?
Yeah,
is that like,
yeah,
right? Form? Yeah, we don't do any forms in jiu-jitsu. But again, I would say we probably like go back to like our favorite moves and submissions is what we would say. Or we could even say, I know on my podcast, I'll ask like, what's your favorite gi or no gi? So like, I love both styles. The gi is great because I can hold and I have a little bit more control, especially as I get older. I can hold people in place by, you know, pulling on their kimono top or their gi. No gi, a little bit faster pace. Still love it. It's still good. But, you know, your cardio better be on point because people move fast and get real slippery. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm heading to no-gi tonight. So.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. All right. Do you have a favorite weapon?
My body, I guess, with jujitsu, right? It's all about our body and leverage. Again, you know, I really don't do any striking disciplines anymore. Getting punched in my face on a Tuesday night when I've got to do a podcast the next day or I've got a meeting. It's just not on any agenda. I do love it. I love to hit the punching bag. When jujitsu, our body is the weapon. So I'll just say my whole body.
That's a great answer. I like it. Right. Final question. If there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
You know, a few years ago, I would have probably said Elio Gracie, who is credited with like really creating Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu according to the Gracie family, which that's been disputed somewhat. But Roger Gracie or Hodger Gracie is one of the most accomplished gi players ever in competition and just in jiu-jitsu as a whole. He sticks with the basics. And me as an older jiu-jitsu player now, I realize now the older I get, the basics are where it's at, you know? So the fancy rolling and berimbolos and things like that, I just say I'm too old for that crap. I'm like to roll around on my back and my shoulders and invert. It's just not for me. I just can't really get into those positions or feel comfortable in those positions. So Hodger Gracie is the king still to this day of submitting with triangles and Kimuras, arm bars. Like he really just has always stuck with the basics and he's a living legend. So I would say Hodger Gracie.
I like it. All right. So now we are at our time for shameless self-promotion. So any other plugs? I mean, obviously, I'm going to promote Academy Safe, but sure. Have any other plugs or if there's anything else that...
Yeah, I'm a king of shameless self-promotion. So Academy Safe, please check out academysafe.org. You can donate to the cause. You can get registered by clicking on Register My Academy. You can find us on Instagram where we spend most of our time promoting. So that's at Academy Safe. I do have my own podcast called, they can't see it, but that's my little sign that we used to hang in the old studio. If you can see it off in the corner, Jiu-Jitsu Dummies, spelled IES at the end, Jiu-Jitsu Dummies on Instagram, same thing. That's where we spend most of our time promoting. You can check us out at Jiu-Jitsu Dummies Podcast on YouTube. We just put out our 159th episode over the course of 6 years. We usually do right now. We're averaging about two a month. Black Belt Digital Marketing, at Black Belt Digital Marketing on Instagram as well. bbdigitalmarketing.com. If you own a business, we specialize in local marketing. So helping more people find you in your area. Doctor, dentist, restaurant. Plumber, electrician, roofer, right? You need people that are close to in proximity to where your office or your yard is. So check us out again, bbdigitalmarketing.com. We do an amazing job of helping increase your rank on Google, your Google business profile rank, your website rank. We do it all, and we do the traditional stuff as well. Logos, we did our Academy Safe logo here that I'm wearing. We do print, we do mailers, we do all that traditional stuff, but we specialize in local marketing. That's about it.
Very nice.
Those are my
three
businesses. That's what I do all day.
Very good. Well, yeah, I thank you again so much for taking the time to be on with me and sharing your story and sharing about Academy Safe. And I can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear.
Yeah,
and I will be following
thank you for
what
having
you're
me.
Doing. And you definitely got a fan here. So, thank you again.
Thank you, Reggie. And definitely invite us to collab on anything that you're posting. Definitely like the Jiu-Jitsu Dummy podcast has the biggest platform. But if you invite us to collab on Instagram, on Academy Safe or Jiu-Jitsu Dummies, we'll accept and you'll be exposed to a new audience out there.
Right on. Will do. Thank you so much.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.